It's time for Israel is Real. Two Israelis putting a human face on all things Israel. Rahel and Sonia focus on life in modern 21st century Israel, telling the stories of ordinary people living in, loving, and in support of an extraordinary land. Israel is Real is a community-supported program featuring interviews with local, national, and international celebrities, personal life stories, and call-ins. Learn a new Hebrew word every week. Israel is Real. Every Friday on 1590 WSMN. Nashua's News and Talk. And now, your hosts, Rahel and Sonia.
Hi, we're Rahel.
And Sonia.
And this is Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel. Boker tov lekol ha'mazinim.
Tzoraim tovim b'Yisrael.
From WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You can also listen to us on WSMNradio.com. That's on the internet, WSMNradio.com. Let's hear some music from a very special guest who we will be listening to this Sunday. Así. We're listening to Bruce Berger, also known as Rebbe Sol. He will be performing at the Beitenu World Coffee House this Sunday night, June 19th at 8 o'clock in the evening. I hope you're loving everything you're hearing because you get to see it live on Sunday night, June 19th at 8 p.m. So we're going to talk about that and you're going to hear some of the cuts from Bruce. And as we go on through the show, so please to find out how to get tickets and just come to the door, just contact Rahel at rahelmusic.net. You can contact me here through Israel is Real, or you can call 603-886-1633, and we'll tell you more about that as we go on. And as we're listening, I think Sonia is going to tell us about our Hebrew word today.
Ger. Ger means, in Hebrew, like from where it's coming. It's come from the Hebrew root gar, lagur, which is mean to dwell or to sojourn with. And in the Hebrew Bible, ger is defined as a stranger or a sojourner which decided that he would like to convert, to live like a Jew.
Nice. And this is, we've had a few guests who are telling us their stories.
We have variation on the same theme.
Variation right. On the theme. And we're going to continue that theme, which is choosing Judaism
right.
This week. We have a wonderful guest. He's been our guest before. He's an author. He's written a book that we were speaking about called
Behind the Lies.
Behind the Lies. And he has another book now, and it's also called, I don't even know the name of it now. It's called,
it's a sequel to Behind the Lies titled Gateway to Terror, and it will be out in the fall.
All right, and you're going to tell us about that. And this is Joe Smiga. He is a local New Hampshire resident, now living happily in retirement. And after working in the corporate world for 18 years and then owning his own sales business for over 25 years, he now spends his time writing and volunteering for worthwhile causes. So as I said, he was a guest on our show. Actually, when we just got started, and we were, you know, the same amateurs we are now. And Joe is going to tell us his story today, a little different story, not one that he's yet written about, but maybe soon to be a book. I don't know. And this is the story of Joe choosing to be Jewish. Boker Tov,
it
Joe.
It actually will be part of my next book. I'm begun a memoir, which was started from the time I was born till the time I'm 70. And so that will be part of my book.
Oh, excellent.
At some point.
You'll come again.
It was my ESP. I had again. A permission.
You had your ESP.
So Joe Smiga, Boker Tov.
Okay. Thank you for having me again a second time. I really enjoyed my first visit. You asked me about my religious background prior to deciding to convert to Judaism.
Right.
And I was raised Roman Catholic. Went to Catholic school for the first 5 years of my elementary school education and was an altar boy. And my grandmother had visions of me becoming a priest someday, which is typical of most grandmothers. And I hope she's not spinning in her grave.
Jewish grandmothers want you to be a doctor or a lawyer.
Well, I understand that.
So Roman Catholic grandmothers want you to be a priest.
Well, when I met my wife and I was introduced to my, not then mother-in-law, but soon to become mother-in-law, she said, well, my mother might not like you're a salesman, but you own your own business, so that's okay. So I was raised Roman Catholic, and at the age of 35, after being married for 14 years, I wound up getting divorced. And at that time, in the mid-70s, the Catholic Church did not recognize divorce, and they tend to be a little bit more lenient now. But at that time, you weren't supposed to receive the sacraments. You could keep coming to services, but, you know, you weren't encouraged to receive the sacraments or participate. You know, so, sort of like feeling left out. Mm-hmm. So probably about a year after my divorce, I started going to some Protestant churches and got involved with the Methodism for a while, and also First Baptist, which is different than Southern Baptist. It's sort of like Reformed Judaism is to conservative Judaism, right? So it's a totally different type thing. And then I met my wife in 1985, my current wife, and she was Jewish. And I didn't have a problem with that dating. As a matter of fact, the first time I met her, she had a big Jewish star hung on her necklace, so I couldn't miss it. But my story about my involvement in Judaism goes back a long ways. I lost my mother when I was 8. Mm-hmm. And she actually went in and out of the hospital for 2 years. She had a brain tumor. Mm-hmm. And she died in 1950. But I had a friend halfway down the block who was Jewish. And his family sort of took me in a little bit under their wing. So I learned to eat smoked fish the very first time. That's something I've never forgotten.
It always starts with the food, doesn't it?
It always starts with the food. And his mom was a great cook, and she'd feed me periodically, because my grandmother was taking care of me, and my grandmother had moved in to take care of me, and my dad was always working, it seemed that anyway. And so I got my first taste of Judaism then. So somebody was taking me under their wing.
Your first taste.
My first taste. Right. Beside that, not, excuse the pun, but.
So how old were you then?
I was 8 when she passed away. Mm-hmm. And I was still in Catholic school till the age of 10. When my dad remarried, I was switched to public school. And then I was married in the Catholic Church in 1962, and then went and got the divorce in the mid-70s. And then I met Linda.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but were you at one time a minister?
I was a lay minister involved. I actually started in the Methodist movement. And I was leaving services one morning, and I shook hands with the minister, and he gave a sermon on love thy neighbor as yourself. And as I left, I shook his hand, and I said, how do you know somebody loves themselves? So he asked me if he could come to the house. So he did, and we spoke, and he invited me to join and do a joint sermon with him. And I did. And there was a retired minister in the assembly and at services, and he made me aware of a lay minister's program. So I took it, got licensed by the Methodist movement. And then for various reasons, it's a short program, ladies, so for various reasons, I changed to First Baptist and wound up being a lay minister for 7 years.
Wow.
So you had a very strong spiritual path that you were following.
Very strong spiritual mm-hmm. path. And actually, when I started dating Linda and I moved from Raymond to Manchester because she wanted to stay in Manchester, I started going to synagogue with her, and I started going to the Episcopal Church in Manchester. Big switch. So I'm easy to switch. But what happened was I was going to synagogue probably about three times a month and to the Episcopal Church about twice a month. And I started questioning my own beliefs.
And this happened a little bit later. You've gone through a lot of different spiritual choices within Christianity.
Right.
And now you've met a Jewish woman, and you're spending a little bit of time in a synagogue and a little bit of time in
a church. Well, I joined Temple Beth Shiurim in Manchester. Mm-hmm. Rabbi Starr was the rabbi at the time, very charismatic rabbi, and he was very welcoming to Linda and I. And the congregation was, too. As a matter of fact, the congregation had a woman president, mm-hmm. and Judy Wolf. And I called Judy at home one night, and I said, you know, you're looking for members for your social action committee. I says, would you take a Christian? So she says, you know, why don't you call the chairman and ask him? And I did. And I said, Judy said to tell you, she thinks you don't have the guts to take on a Christian. So, of course, what's the guy going to say, right?
No, I have.
So I joined the committee and worked on the committee for a number of years. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Starr and I actually started that food drive that they have every year. And
nice.
I ran it for 7 years. And so, you know, I've had various transitions. But what happened was I felt very welcomed by the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. I knew I wasn't Jewish, and nobody tried to change me or convert me. Mm-hmm. But you know, I felt very welcome. And I didn't feel that in Christianity any longer.
Really?
So I said, why am I going to both? And Linda and I got married. I was not Jewish when we got married. She had never tried to get me to convert. And 6 months, not even 6 months after we were married. We were married in June. Matter of fact, tomorrow's our anniversary, 22nd anniversary.
Mazal tov.
And November, mid-November, near Thanksgiving, I said, sit down, we need to talk. She got nervous. She, what is she going to say? And I said, I want to convert to Judaism.
Uh-huh.
She said, you don't have to. We're already married. I said, I'm not doing it for you. I'm doing it for me. And I honestly believe that's why somebody should convert, if they do it for themselves. And so she went through the typical process of trying to talk me out of it three times.
She played the rabbi, huh?
She played the rabbi. And
the Beit Din, the Jewish court.
Then I called Linda's mother and told her, and she told me, you know, I've been praying for you to convert for 4 years, but would never tell you.
Wow.
Shoot.
And as Linda said to me, don't ever doubt a Jewish mother.
So what was the turning point in your mind? What, I guess I'll ask it this way. What attracted you most? I mean, you said that it was a welcoming community.
It was a welcoming community.
What made the switch?
I guess deep down inside, I needed a community, okay, since I lost my mother. There were too many things, I'll say in Christianity, but all religions have the same problem. There are too many things that are man-made, man-developed, and I stopped believing in a lot of them in Christianity.
Now, that's an interesting statement.
And I learned Abraham could argue with God. I feel I can do that now, too, and not feel guilty about it.
This is something that I asked, and I'm always asking, why you are choosing Judaism when everyone around just wants to kill us?
Like, my wife said the same thing. She said, everybody wants to kill
exactly,
us. What do you want?
Like, you know. And somebody told me that it's about freedom. And they ask, in what sense freedom?
Right.
And she, exactly this is what she said, the freedom to argue even with God. And they said, so what is so impressing with this? It's, of course you are arguing with God. And she said, no, this is what you think. This is Judaism. Look, again and again, this is what I have to say. I think that we are blessed to have people that are choosing Judaism. This is a great honor to have you among us. So thank you.
You. You know, and I've, since I've converted, I've never felt. I converted in 91. Mm-hmm. No, excuse me, 90. Mm-hmm. And actually had a bar mitzvah in 91.
Wow.
My 50th birthday. Okay.
How exciting.
It was. It was, and yeah. I learned to read the Maftir and chant the Haftorah. And I was studying with Rabbi Starr, and my wife and I were flying back from California for my brother-in-law's 50th birthday. And she said, you know, next year's your 50th. What would you like to do? And I hadn't officially converted yet. Uh-huh. And I thought about it, and I said, you know, I'd like to have a bar mitzvah. She said, are you nuts? Do you realize what you have to go through? I said, no, but I'd like to learn. And I studied Hebrew with Cheryl Ishai from Temple Israel at 9 o'clock in her home because I used to travel. And I was her third student of the night. And I had a wonderful time for a year learning Hebrew and walking through all that process. And my wife said to me, well, about a month after we got off the plane, she said, are you really serious about this bar mitzvah stuff? I said, yeah. She said, well, you better talk to the rabbi because they're planned a year in advance. So I did. And rabbi says, well, you haven't converted yet, but we can always take it off the list if you change your mind. But he put it on the month of October because October 5th is my birthday. And he said, oh, don't worry about it. If you change your mind, we'll take it off. And we went through it.
And he didn't.
But you had to convert first.
Right.
Yes,
so
right.
Convert first,
then your bar mitzvah. And now you have a Hebrew name.
Yosef Tzur ben Abraham.
Yosef Tzur ben Abraham. It's such a beautiful name, isn't
Tzur,
it?
Yes.
Yosef Tzur.
Tzur Israel.
Can we call you Yosef Tzur for the rest of the interview?
You can.
Good. It's such a beautiful name.
Thank you. I think it is, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How did you get that name?
Well, Joseph being my first name. Yosef is easy connection, okay? But my Christian middle name is Peter.
Okay.
And Rabbi Starr said, Tzur is the rock.
Right.
So it's a symbolism of Peter. So I was anointed Yosef Tzur.
Interesting. Really interesting.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. I wonder, it was coming in my mind, we had last week, We have 5 minutes. It's going to take me 5 minutes to ask my question. We had a man here who also went through a conversion, chose Judaism, and went through. He spoke about the spiritual aspects, the emotional aspects, and the physical aspects. I wonder if you could fill us in for you how those are all coming into play. And I guess we could start with part of it, and then we'll break, and then you can go on to the rest of it. But
well, the physical aspects have various steps to it. Mm-hmm. I converted in the Reformed Temple, and my wife is a very spiritual Jew, and she found out about this Jewish retreat center in New York State in 1995. So she said, let's go for a week. It sounds like it's going to be great. And we went. And I found in doing that, there were things I didn't learn in the Reform movement that I would have liked to learn. And they weren't going to teach it. That wasn't Rabbi Starr's forte. So I went to the week, and I learned to wrap tefillin. Mm-hmm. I learned to daven, something I thought I would never do.
Daven is a form of prayer.
Daven is a form of prayer. And I started going. I went to see the rabbi at Temple Israel, who I knew, and he says, well, you know, we do it all in Hebrew, so you'll just have to catch up on your own. And I said, that's fine. And
you already knew Hebrew anyway.
A little bit. A little bit. And really? So I would sit in the, as a matter of fact, the first time I showed up at morning prayer, you know, a gentleman says to me, you know, are you here to say Yahrzeit? I said, no.
Yahrzeit is memorial over a loved one who passed.
And you here to say Shloshim? I said, no.
And again, the memorial.
And he had a question on his way. I said, I just came to pray. Is that okay?
He's looking for, you know, if you have a goal, that's it.
And yeah. He never saw you before, probably, there. He figured you must have been here
for some reason.
For some real reason.
But the funny thing is that same situation happened to me in Great Neck, New York, when I would go visit my mother-in-law. I'd go to Daven. And same thing happened to me at morning services.
So you just gathered tic-tac.
And they look at you kind of funny, you know. But I would go, and because I traveled too, so I wasn't there, you know, all week long. So when I was able to make it, I would go a couple times a week, and I enjoyed it. You know, I did what I could to keep up, and nobody gave me a hard time. A year later, I'm still there. And I think people thought after a couple of months, this guy would go away like a bad cold. But I'm still there, and I decided to join Temple Israel.
Uh-huh.
And I decided to grow within my Judaism. I learned to lead chakra service.
The morning prayers.
Mm-hmm. Prayers. And my mentor is Chauvin Krensky. And he taught me in segments how to do it. And then he would let me do that portion of the service and then sit down and somebody else would take over until I could do a complete service. And it took me a few months, but I did it. And to me, that's a wonderful experience.
So this has been a really fantastic learning process and personal growth process, it
Absolutely.
Seems. You mentioned in the, you know, the spiritual side and physically just being present in a worship.
Yeah, I have a little joke I tell. I reconverted in 98 to conservative Judaism.
Oh, uh-huh. Really?
Okay. Uh-huh. And because they wanted me on the board of directors, they said, you know, you should be a conservative, you know how those politics are. So I did. And in Reform Judaism, you didn't need a circumcision. And you didn't need to go to the mikveh.
Uh-huh.
Right? And, of course, when I was born in New Jersey, the Lord's where I was already circumcised in 1941. But I had to go for the drop of blood.
Exactly.
And I actually wound up coming to Nashua here.
Uh-huh.
The Moyle here was an obstetrician. Uh-huh. He and his wife have a practice over in town. And South Main Street, I think it is, if I remember correctly. And the funny thing about it is the rabbi from Beth Abraham was my sponsor because Temple Israel was without a rabbi at the time. And he was going away because he was preparing to get married. And so the doctor says, this is the drop of blood. And, you know, and he says, this is what I would show the rabbi. He says, but since he's not here, it's okay. And he says, I want you to know you're my first reconversion. I said, that's okay, doc. You're my first obstetrician.
We'll stop right there on that, and we're going to come back. We're speaking with Joe Smiga, also an author, also in Hebrew, Yosef Tzur ben Avraham, and we're very thrilled. We're speaking about choosing Judaism. This is WSMN 1590. We're going to go out hearing a little bit more of Bruce Berger, Rebbe Sol, who will be coming here to Amherst, New Hampshire, the Beitenu World Coffee House on June 19th. That's this Sunday at 8 p.m. You're listening to WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk, and this is Israel is Real with Rachel and Sonia. And wouldn't it be awesome if over 100,000 people, actually millions of people, knew about your business, your product, or your service? And wouldn't it be even more amazing if you or your business were helping to stop the hatred and terrorism by supporting the good news about Israel? You can do this by sponsoring a Hebrew word, a Torah portion, and even a weekly Israel is Real show. So take out your checkbook now, and I mean now.
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 She is very serious.
Make a donation. You might want to advertise. You might want to sponsor our show or even have us read a personal greeting on a special occasion. So by supporting Israel is Real, you are making a world of difference. And yes, by loving Israel, you will make the world a better place. So again, pull out that checkbook now.
Now.
Write the check to Absolute Broadcasting. Send the check to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. Again, write that check now to Absolute Broadcasting. Send it to our personal mailbox at Israel is Real, P.O. Box 236, Milford, New Hampshire, 03055. For more information and rates, go to our website at www.israelisraelnh.com. That's ISRAELISRAELNH.com.
Did you know that The Vision is an organization that educates our community about the little country of Israel? Did you know Israel is approximately about the size of New Jersey? And did you know how the world religions are spread in the world? For example, Christianity, 2 billion people. Islam, 1.3 billion people. Hinduism, 900 million people. Buddhism, 360 million people. And what about Judaism?
Tell me.
14 million people.
14?
14 million people. That's it. To stay informed and to receive Vision's emails alert and be informed about Vision's educational activities and opportunities, please visit Vision's website at www.newhampshireforisrael.org. That's www.newhampshireforisrael.org.
And as I said throughout the show, we're listening to the music of Bruce Berger, also known as Rebbe Soul. You can find him at www.rebbesoul.com, rebbesoul.com. He will be appearing live at the Beitenu World Coffee House in Amherst, New Hampshire. Congregation Beitenu, 5 Northern Boulevard, Amherst, New Hampshire. You can find out more by writing to us at beitenu@nii.net, beitenu@nii.net. You can call to reserve tickets, or you can buy them at the door. And the telephone number is 603-886-1633 or 603-554-1459. Be sure to come hear Rebbe Soul live June 19th. That's this Sunday at 8 p.m.
Okay, shall I continue?
Sure.
Shall I continue? Okay, and have you heard the buzz? Rachel's music is touching hearts of listeners all around the world. To hear Rachel's unique sound and to book Rachel to perform for you live, just go to www.rachelmusic.net. That's www.rachelmusic.net. Yes, I did a mistake, so.
We all make mistakes. That's how we learn.
Very nice. You are so nice.
And this is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You're listening to Israel is Real. And we're speaking to
Joe Smiga,
Yosef Tzur Ben Avraham, who we will hear in just another 20 seconds.
Nashua's News and Talk, and we have a great guest here, Rachel and myself. We are speaking with Joe Smiga, and when we start listening the music, I decided that I am speaking when the microphone is off. My question was, you know, usually you are not questioning your tradition, because tradition, it's part of your life. It's like you are not questioning your own home. You are not questioning, okay, why shall I sleep in the bed and not on the table? So it having a great impact on somebody's life to go to another place.
Yes, it does. And there is an internal transition, too. There's no question about that. I think after I converted in the Reform Movement in 1990, I still felt a little different, mm-hmm. and I had to accept myself as a Jew. Uh-huh. Right? No one said I wasn't a Jew, but I had to feel it myself. And I have to comment on the congregation. They were wonderful, and they made me feel welcome, which was really very good. So,
welcome.
Thank you.
So choosing Judaism is an intellectual process, or it's
it is an it began as an intellectual process.
How come? From where?
I have to say, and people think this is very childish when I explain it to them, but it's real. And, because as a child, I was taught, at that time, the Catholics were saying they were the only true religion, you know, and there are many religions say the same thing, you know, right. over the years. And,
it's very
you
know, modern,
you don't go outside of the church.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with that philosophy as a child, you still have those tapes in your head. And my mother-in-law, Linda's mother, who accepted me from the first weekend we met, because I took the time to drive down to the airport to pick her up, and along with Linda, and spent time with him over the weekend, and I had dinner at my house, so she could come and see my house, and she invited me to Passover. So you're talking now from November to March, then I wound up going to Passover down at Great Neck, New York. And it was a wonderful experience because family came from all over the country. Her whole family, her brother and her sister and their spouses and children, all made me feel very welcome. And I think they had instructions from mother to make sure that happened.
Or maybe you are a very sympathetic person. That's it.
I don't know. I don't want to take credit for that. But she was really wonderful. I could always talk to her. Uh-huh. We talked about many things, pain and suffering she dealt with, pain and suffering I dealt with. And you know, she was a real mother for me.
Which is exactly because you have grown motherless,
right.
child
absolutely.
Motherless, so this is.
And you know, as a matter of fact, I started feeling that spiritually, if what I was taught as a child, mm-hmm. you know, the Catholic Church was the only true church, you know, God, this lady is beautiful, she's wonderful, you know, if I can't change and be like she is, then I don't care to go to heaven. That's what I said to myself. Mm-hmm. And I made this final. It took 2 years to do it. I didn't make it overnight. Yeah. It was a two-year transition for me.
This is also why Judaism is not only to go to the mikveh, to take the ritual bath and
right.
declare yourself a Jew, because Judaism recognized the problematic thing that you have a long transition and you need to learn.
Well, you talked about the mikveh bath. After I did the drop of blood, I went to Boston and did the mikveh because I hadn't done it in the Reform Movement. And, you know, I had to sit before the Beit Din and answer questions. They had a letter from the rabbi, uh-huh. and very highly recommended me.
Yes.
But they asked me some questions, and I guess I answered them favorably because they said, okay, we're going to go take you to the mikveh.
Uh-huh.
And so I went through that process. And it's really a beautiful, not just a religious process, it's a symbolic process that makes it part of your life.
This is unbelievable. This is so beautiful.
This is the question I have. When you're choosing Judaism, you're not just choosing your faith, your particular religion, but you, as you say, this becomes part of your life, your lifestyle. Can you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, because, well, it goes back again. I always felt close to Israel. And when the 48 war, even though I was only 7 years old, I felt very close to Israel. The 67 war, the Yom Kippur war, I was worried that they weren't going to make it. And but God had other plans. Judaism has enveloped my whole life. not just spiritually with prayers, right? Linda and I light Shabbos candles every Friday. Okay, we buy a challah or make a challah. We make our own sometimes. And we do the holy days, Passover, the kids, the family, the whole thing, Hanukkah candles. And when I traveled and for business on the road during Hanukkah, I was having problems with my TV one night in my hotel room. And it was a Holiday Inn up in Maine. And I called and asked them to come and send somebody to take a look at it. And I forgot I had the menorah lit. Dresser. And the guy walks in the room and he looks as relaxed. It's not drugs. It's not, but, you know, I did those kind of things. And to me, they're very meaningful. Mm-hmm. It adds a dimension to your life that you're not just you. You know, I don't look at myself just as an American Jew. I look at myself as a worldwide Jew.
You are speaking about Hanukkah, one of the most meaningful Hanukkah that I celebrate. It was in December 1997. Mm-hmm. We've been in Poland. The 11th grade school in Israel with two teachers. I was one of them. And I remember that before I go to this trip, I get a very nice, very nice Chanukiah, Menorata Chanukah, mm-hmm. from my history teachers, colleagues. And it was something, and even today when I'm enlightening this Chanukiah, mm-hmm. it's having a special meaning. This Chanukiah, it's so simple, it's so distant, it's so small. And even when we put it out and we light the Chanukiah's candles, it's make a great impact in Poland.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, Joe Smika, also known as Yosef Tzur, I want to ask you, as we're discussing, you've embraced a spiritual path, you've embraced a physical and an emotional path, and an intellectual path. Now, it's an all-encompassing, holistic right. way of life now that you've become Jewish. And how is that affecting, how does that affect your worldview, the way you conduct your life in general now, your perspective? And where do you go with that now that you are fully Jewish, fully embraced in a very well-rounded way? What's happening now? What's going on?
What's your mission?
My mission in life is, number one, I donate time to the Jewish community. All right? I've spent 2 one-year terms on the Federation Board. I find that... I work on the committee, Hafa Kamel Committee now. My wife and I are involved with the Hafa Kamel Committee.
That's the New Hampshire sister city?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Israel's sister cities.
We get involved with a lot of events with the Jewish Federation, Israel Independence Day and so forth. But it's funny, in 2005, my wife started, and I started talking about my retiring at the end of 2007, and I really said I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure. And I'd been in sales for a long time, and I knew I wanted to get out of traveling 800 to 1,000 miles a week. And she said, why don't you start writing? Of course, I never thought of being an author, but I wrote a book, a novel called Behind the Lies. Right. And it's about the nuclear terror threat with Iran. And
which, when we interviewed you last year, seemed so distant, didn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's... I think my love and concern for Israel helped me write that book. Mm-hmm. And its sequel now is in a little bit similar, but the concern for the U.S., because some major characters from the first book are working with cells in this country that have been here for decades to create internal terrorism. And they will be consecutive days of terrorism. And this is reality.
Hasta Chalila, as we say, we hope, God forbid.
God forbid.
God forbid.
But we already had a 9/11.
Yeah.
This will be worse. It's fiction, but I had a gentleman at the Chabad groundbreaking who lives in the state, and we talked about this, and his brother works in a security firm in Washington, and he said, what you are talking about really exists.
And you're I said, I know.
I know, that's why I wrote it.
As you're coming back to, you know, why did you want to join a nation that wants to kill us? You know, that
people want to kill us.
People want to kill, you know?
Well, I look at it this way. I've been blessed. I'll be 70 in October. I don't have too many more years to live, so I'd rather go doing it the way I want to do it.
First of all, ad me abesrim. And then we will continue to wish you.
Yeah. No. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, so you have a new worldview. You have a new inner self. You have a new outer self. And so it is coming into play now, very much so at this point in your writing. And we should say, by the way, if anybody wants to get your books and get a hold of you, you have a website.
www.joesmiga.com. That'll get behind the lies. The website for the sequel hasn't come out yet because the book is just went to publication. But it's available at Barnes & Noble's, available Amazon. They're also available ebook too, hardcover, softcover, and ebook.
And that's joesmiga.com, J-O-E-S like Sam, M like Mary, I-G-A, joesmiga.com. So tell us, we still have some time. I wonder if you could tell us, what then is unique? You know, we just had Shavuot, and we know the story of Ruth and Naomi. And Ruth says, your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. She is considered the first convert to Judaism, the first one who chose
whenever
Judaism.
Whenever that story is read, I feel very close to that story.
Tell us about it.
And you know, Ruth goes with her mother-in-law and has lost her husband. And her mother-in-law tries to chase her away because she figures she's a young woman. She needs to do for herself. And she says, no, you know, you're family. You need my support, and your God is my God. And she actually converts to Judaism.
And this is also what is interesting, is that he's saying first, your people are my people.
Right.
And only then your God will be my God.
Right.
The meaning is that, exactly like you said, the people are the one which can make an impact on your decision where to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I was very fortunate that I had a very welcoming congregation when I decided to convert. And, you know, I spent time with them before I made the decision to convert. So I knew, you know, where they were coming from and what I wanted. So I feel comfortable with it. You know, I mean, Linda and I were in Israel in 2006. We were out at a conservative synagogue, and we had a dinner there. It was a big dinner. There were 33 of us from the Jewish Federation that went there. And about 10:30 that night, after everything was all over, Linda and I decided to walk back to the King David Hotel. And you know, we're walking in Jerusalem, and I feel safer there than I do in this country.
Yeah,
Baruch Hashem, this is something that you need to live to understand. Like,
right, and we're going back next year for 2 months.
This is wonderful.
Tell us about the program that you're going to be on, actually. It sounds so exciting.
Hadassah, which is a Jewish women's organization, has a program called Winter in Netanya. And Linda is the treasurer of the local Manchester Hadassah chapter. And I'm a Hadassah associate, part of the men's group. And they have this program that runs for 28 days or 56 days. And so you can decide to go for 28 or 56. I mean, the airfare is major part of the cost, so it's not too much more to stay for 56 days. So we're going to do the 56 days. But I learned from a gentleman in Tennessee, because I asked for some references for the program, and he's 88 years old. Mm. And he has been 2 years now, 2010, 2009. And he plans to go back in 2013. And he said that Sunday and Monday, you volunteer time, and that in the mornings. In the afternoons, you can take Hebrew lessons based on whatever level you were at. In the evenings, there's plenty of activities. Tuesdays, the day off, you take a trip as a group. And Wednesdays and Thursdays, you do the same thing. You volunteer time in the morning. And that's part of the reason the trip is not so expensive, because they're encouraging people to volunteer services. And then Friday and Saturday, you're on your own.
Hmm.
So, and for 8 weeks, that's going to be wonderful.
So you're going to be able to be part of a new community, which is the Israeli community, which will be the same and different. The same and different, yeah.
Right.
So Joe Smiga, Yosef Tzur, we are coming to the close of our show. If you have just a few, something specific you want to tell our listeners about your path of choosing Judaism, what would be the thing that you would want to leave our listeners with?
If it is in your heart to convert, and I mean in your heart, I don't believe in converting for anyone else's reasons. But if it's in your heart, open up your heart and learn. And then if the decision is right for you, go for it.
Thank you.
Amen.
Thank you.
Joe Smiga, Yosef Tzur, it's been really a pleasure to have you here and hear your story. We're learning so much from the people who choose Judaism, and it's really, as Sonia said, an honor to have people like you
Thank
in
you.
Our nation and here in our studio.
Thank you for having me.
So, and we want to encourage our listeners also to purchase your books, to find out, to read your stories, which are extremely interesting. And again, they can find you at joesmiga.com. That's Joe, S like Sam, M like Mary, IGA.com. Thank you, Joe, Yosef Tzur. It's been really wonderful to have you a second time.
Thank you.
Sonia, tell us about this week's Torah portion.
Parashat Shelach. This week we read about how the spies went to Israel and carried, among other things, giant grapes on a wooden pail. Rashi explains that one person can carry third of the weight that two people can carry. For example, if one person can carry 100 pounds on his shoulders, then two people can carry 300 pounds together. From here, the Hasidic Sepharism sages teach us an uplifting message. Two Jews have more power to uplift together than one alone. And this is the power being unified and carrying one on the other.
Amen.
Shabbat shalom.
We're listening now to the music of Bruce Berger, Rabbi Sol, who will be appearing this Sunday at the Beitenu World Coffee House in Amherst, New Hampshire, just this Sunday, June 19th at 8 p.m. For information, you can go to www.rebbesoul.com, rabbisoul.com. This is WSMN 1590, Nashua's News and Talk. You're listening to Israel is Real, the free voice for Israel with Rachel and
Sonia.
And we thank again our guest, Joe Smiga. His books can be found at www.joesmiga.com, joesmiga.com.
It's happened and to you as well.
It's happened to me because George over there, our wonderful, amazing sound guy and help here at WSMN, is giving me the fingers.
I'm giving you the peace sign.
The peace sign. He's making me nervous. It's the countdown. So we're going to take you out with some of the music from Bruce Berger, Rebbe Sol, and we wish you a Shabbat Shalom from Israel is Real.